Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of evolutionary voices for the quantum age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience evolutionary voices for the quantum age, Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com.
Welcome to Radical Transformational Leadership with Dr. Monica Sharma, heard every other Tuesday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and every Saturday, 6 a.m. Eastern. This is a Dream Vision 7 Radio Network production on the Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age platform. To learn more, go to DreamVision7Radio.com. Monica Sharma embodies the mindful and compassionate change agent the world needs now. In Radical Transformational Leadership, she offers us all a map for action and a clarion call to become the change we want to see. Monica Sharma's voice, based on experience and conviction, strengthens the case that leadership can be shaped with equality, freedom, and justice, rooted in the transformational power of human compassion. I invite you into this most powerful show with Dr. Monica Sharma.
It's my pleasure to be with you again today. And today we have a guest speaker, Nancy Roof. She is a founder of the award-winning Cosmos Journal, which is about global transformation in harmony with all life. And it's based on evolving interior development and cultural values as they impact globalization and the world community. Cosmos Associates is actively involved in the founding of the Global Commons Movement and the Global Commons Trust. Nancy won the 2009 Images and Voices of Hope Award for Journalism as a tool to inform, inspire, and engage individual and collective participation. I can go on and on about this, and I will tell you more about Nancy every time I start another session. But for now, Nancy, I met you at the UN, and I was so touched by the way you responded to what I started with. So I'd want people to know a little more about you, your journey in life, your compassion, and what makes your compassionate heart reach out through a thousand ways.
Oh, thank you, Monica. Meeting you at the UN was one of the highlights of my life, because when I met you, I saw a woman who could stand up to power in a harmonious way that enables cooperation. And this touched my heart and my soul, because I saw a woman who was powerfully enabled to transform our global and local and individual cultures.
Thank you, Nancy. And I was equally inspired by what you've done and what you told me about Bosnia and how your heart reaches out today with what's happening, in our broken world. Would you like to share that with people, what happened and how you saw things and what that made you, what that inspired you to do? Your compassion.
Well, I think it was compassion. You know, it's very interesting. We think that arguments and facts and data change people's minds. But truly, we're discovering that it's from another place that people are moved to take action. And one of those that you mentioned, Bosnia, I think that was when I experienced the most heartbreaking feelings I have ever had on a very global level, when I realized that genocide was happening right before our eyes. And my heart just said, I cannot leave a legacy to my grandchildren and say, I knew it, but I never did anything about it. So that just inspired me to, I didn't know how I could help, but it inspired me that I just had to find a way to help. I could not sit back and watch this genocide before my eyes. And that then led me to start investigating what NGO groups were on the ground in Bosnia, and what kinds of grants were being given to help people. And I then went over with my own money to the area in Croatia, close to Bosnia, and interviewed people and asked them directly, what do you need? What can I do for you? And with that, interviewing so many people and so many groups, I found out that the thing that they most needed was training in secondary traumatic stress. We knew that wars created stress in individuals involved, but we really didn't know at that time that this trauma went to families, to communities, in a secondary way, that you didn't have to be directly in the war. You could be indirectly in the war, and even future generations were impacted by the wars in their countries. So that inspired me to get a grant from USAID and collect a team and go over there and give workshops in different areas where we could get in, where the war was not actively being committed at that moment, but on the outskirts of those areas. And I must say, even though I knew the facts of what was going on, it was this compassion, this broken heart that motivated me to something I never dreamed I would ever dream, I'd ever do. And yes, so that's kind of a brief story of Bosnia.
Thank you, Nancy. And you know, this so resonates with the way in which I work, as you said, and the book that I wrote, where we say one of the innate attributes of human beings is this compassion. And what is it that we tend to stay in our limbic system, more emotional self, not that that's not important, but how can those reactions drive us? How can dominance and dominating practices drive us? And how can we awaken this compassionate heart? So for us, this is so important that every strategy around the world that we work with, whether that's at national level or at grassroots level or at home, is anchored in compassion for each other. It's anchored in universal dignity for each other. It's anchored in equity. And so for us, this is so important. And Nancy, you and I were having a conversation the other day, and you were sharing how your compassionate heart is broken open by families being torn apart today. Would you like to say something about the consequences of such actions and what it does to families, societies, and humanity?
Yes, we were discussing this very cruel policy that my country has perpetrated on families. I think that the people who have decided that this is the solution, even in detention with families together, do not realize the psychological and physical consequences of separating children from their parents. Children will be marked for life and traumatized all their life, and they could become burdens of society because of the lingering traumatic stress that they are too young to incorporate in their whole being. They can't do it, so they tend to dissociate. And with this dissociation, they will have trauma, nightmares, all their life. So knowing this, and even if I didn't know this as a mother myself, the idea of my children being separated is beyond imagination for me. It's not only the children that are suffering, but the parents themselves who know that by bearing children, you have responsibility for them. And as these poor mothers are separated from their children, the pain and the torment traumatizes them as well. So I wish that we had more psychological knowledge in the policies for policymakers who make decisions such as this that jeopardize the lives of so many.
Yes, Nancy.
There's another aspect to this too, and that is caring for all children and all life, that our caring and our compassion should be for all humanity, no matter what country they live in. There are sisters and brothers and children of all humanity, and that expansion of our love and caring should be to all children, no matter what country they come from.
Nancy, thank you so much for saying this. And knowing that you are an expert clinical psychologist, these words have even more importance. You know, for me, connecting our compassionate heart to policies is so vital. It is the foundation of our work, because if we do not have practices, templates, tools, ways to connect to the space, for social transformation, not just for personal transformation, I think it's not going to work for us as a society, as humanity. And that's what actually you and I resonate with, how this personal transformation is an aspect of social transformation. It does not happen automatically. It's not that when I learn to transform myself and touch my greatness, my inner capacity, my compassion, that I will automatically be more compassionate. I will need to learn templates and tools that connect my compassionate heart to policies and programs that generate new ways of dealing with society, that compassion in myself is a necessary but not sufficient condition for societal change. So that's the space where you and I have been working together. And thank you in those days when we met to have me write in Cosmos Journal. It was so important for me, Nancy. And you know what I loved about the journal is the beauty you bring into the journal. For me, beauty is a space that is so unique. It's not about the materialistic way in which we invent beauty. Like, I've never understood why diamonds are so important, considering that we know each diamond is part of exploited labor in the mining industry. So beauty has been so important for you. A different kind of beauty, not the beauty we construct, concoct, and actually exploit people with. So what would you like to say about beauty, Nancy?
Well, I would like to... beauty has been so important in my own life. And I realize the human soul is hungry for beauty, truth, and goodness. And when I founded Cosmos Journal, that was explicitly a major mission, to to produce this journal with beauty. And I find if one is in touch with real beauty that touches the soul, it transforms us, it changes us, it softens the heart. In some cases, we even become one and unified with whatever that object of beauty may be, whether it's a person, an object, a quality of being within a person. It changes us. It softens us. It allows us to slow down and really fall in love with beauty. And meditation has become really mainstream in the United States now, and I believe strongly in meditation and practice to help us deal with our subjective reality. But in addition to meditation, I also think the recognition and the being with beauty helps us endure through the trials and tribulations of dark days, especially today. And we can find beauty in our own imagination, our own minds, remembering the most beautiful place in nature we've ever been, remembering the goodness of a kindness and a generosity of some stranger, or really finding truth at last in the midst of post-truth era. So beauty is just essential, in my view, to healing our planet.
Thank you, Nancy. And, you know, you brought up this whole space of beauty as a process of, you know, and a process of slowing down and meditation. I look at that with a slightly different eye, but I know we are on the same page. So for me, meditation and beauty is about stillness. And too often, you and I look at stillness and slowing down in the same way. You know, what we mean is we don't want to chatter in our minds. But slowing down for many people just means like a vacating their mind and doing nothing more, like a vacation. So not that we shouldn't have vacations, but it's like we empty it, not in a creative way, but we empty it like as a dull space where we don't think, we don't respond. And so for me, stillness is about beauty. Stillness is about meditation, my ability to be still in the midst of hurrying. So it's like the urgency of our work requires us not to slow down, but to remain in urgency with this beautiful stillness. Because in that stillness, we can be so creative. We can come up with new ways in which we respond, new ways in which we understand what we are doing to ourselves and our planet. Would you agree, Nancy?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I love the way you brought up how in the mainstream people take vacations to slow down, whereas we're talking about the stillness, slowing down through stillness within. And stillness, and often people think of stillness as not moving the body, whereas we're talking about stillness of the mind.
Yes, that is so congruent with the compassionate heart. The stillness of the mind is so important for the compassionate heart to find new pathways. Otherwise, we are going to do the same old thing and package it as something new. Absolutely, right, Nancy. And so for me, you know, this beauty is so different from the way beauty is being constructed in media today. And I'd love your take on that, because so much of beauty is commodifying what and creating new norms. Like, I know there are young children today, teenagers, who believe the only way to be beautiful is to be extremely slim, and they will deprive themselves of food to be that way, because that's how beauty has been created. Yes. So yes. What would you like to say about that?
Oh, yes, that we are conditioned by our culture, unless we stand back in stillness to really examine it. And the concept of beauty that our society has created in terms of personal bodies, of course, has been extremely difficult for women and even men to be able to conform to it. And most people try. This idea of thinness has become so commercialized, all kinds of diets for sale. You know, it's not the kind of beauty that touches the soul. This is what we're looking for. And instead, not only this, but art in the art world, millions of dollars for a painting that I can look at and not be moved in any way, not be touched, because there's something commercial about it. There's something that's trying to draw my attention to it rather than to be in my heart. And I think in the art world today, a lot of it I see is intellectual art or art to surprise and art to jar us instead of touching our soul and our heart, which is what people are really longing for, but really don't know how to define it in a culture that's conditioned us to commercialize beauty and art.
Thank you, Nancy. This has been such a rich conversation. We will break and we will join again after a few minutes.
Fine.
We live in a world battling for peace, threatened with violence and inequality, being justified as both means and ends, sometimes disguised, packaged, and branded differently. This self-destructive worldview is dominated and backed by spurious arguments for leadership based on the idea of supremacy of race, religion, culture, or of money. Monica's Counter, a perspective drawn from contemporary idiom, is based on experience and conviction. It shows that leadership can be shaped with equality, freedom, justice, and where means and ends are rooted in the transformatory power of human compassion. Let's explore this transformatory power of human compassion together. Join us for the program with Dream Vision 7 Radio Network every other Tuesday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and every Saturday at 6 a.m. Eastern. Share this information widely. Enroll people who want to make a difference. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network hosts many programs that unite humanity sourcing our love. Are you satisfied with the world as it is today? If you're not satisfied, join us for a program to unleash your full potential with Dr. Monica Sharma in August in Mumbai, India. It's open to all changemakers wanting to generate equitable and sustainable results for well-being. Contact +91 931 044 2441. That's +91 931 044 2441. Go to fullpotential.workshop at tiss.edu. That's fullpotential.workshop at tiss.edu. Everyone has the potential to be a leader, a person who creates a new future through actions in society, at home, and at work. In this program, you'll discover pathways for unleashing our human potential to create new futures through strategic action. Again, join us for a program to unleash your full potential with Dr. Monica Sharma in August in Mumbai, India. Contact +91 931 044 2441. That's +91 931 044 2441. Go to fullpotential.workshop at tiss.edu. That's fullpotential.workshop at tiss.edu. We need new leadership capacities to face the challenges of today's world, to think differently, design strategically, and act on principles with accountability and generate results. These new capacities must be able to align principles, purpose, and practice to build a better world. Again, join us for a program to unleash your full potential with Dr. Monica Sharma in August in Mumbai, India. Contact +91 931 044 2441. That's +91 931 044 2441. Go to fullpotential.workshop at tiss.edu. That's fullpotential.workshop at tiss.edu. Are you a game changer? Do you care about creating a vibrant future for humanity planet? If you care, you'll choose to engage in strategic actions in order to transform the realities of today for generating a thriving planet. Find out how you can do this. Read the book, Radical Transformational Leadership, by Dr. Monica Sharma. This book is a systemic exploration of how to work with and transform the interlocking circumstances contributing to the complex problems we're facing. There's a chance of achieving a world that manifests peace, equity, and well-being for everyone. And this work offers the readers the creative ways and means of contributing to such a world-changing agenda.
It's wonderful to be back again with you, Nancy. And we were talking about beauty. And from there, I wanted to explore another conversation that you and I have had. You know, the need to move from individual only. Of course, we must cultivate our own inner space individually, to collective action, and to move from the separate, independent space to interdependence. Our ability to shift our worldview, not a worldview based on ideology and rigidity, but a worldview that is based on our own inquiry, but always anchored in compassion, in dignity for all, in equity for all. And the fact that today we are so materialistic and we need to shift. So Nancy, let's take up one of these things. What do you want to say about moving, transcending our separative self to one of interdependency? How do you see that based on science, based on psychology, what you know? Yes, Nancy.
Well, I see that the Western culture has been based on the individual. And this has been the fundamental principle behind our economic system of capitalism, where it's profit and winning and competition that counts. And the winner is the individual. And this kind of conditioning is so much a part of Western culture that it's really hard for many people to realize the fact that there really is no such thing as a separate individual. An individual is part of the culture. We're interdependent with our food supply, with nature, with our neighbors, with our country. We are totally interdependent beings. And this is one of the major shifts in worldview that is beginning to happen on the margins, and some of it's moving into the mainstream, but we're still very much on the margins. And this idea of the fact that we are our neighbor, we are dependent on what happens to everyone else on the planet. And we see a lot of organization development in the form of networks now. We can see this happening, that people are realizing in order to transform, it takes more than a heroic individual. It takes a group of people, a network of people, and now we're even talking about linking networks to networks in terms of transformation. Whereas in the past, and even in mainstream, still in mainstream, in the mainstream culture, people look for heroes or one person that can change everything. And now we're beginning to realize, no, it's you, it's me, it's your neighbor. We are the ones to make the change together. And this linking together is one of the capacities that we're trying to learn how to do. Because even in groups, we can find that groups will say, my group is right. And then we get into the same thing of separation instead of cooperation. So this is a very, very big and very current topic. We're very much involved in it in terms of Cosmos. In fact, when I founded the beginning of my life, I was a transpersonal psychologist, and I worked with individuals. And when I had the desire to go to the United Nations, I realized that it was not just individuals that, even important as individual transformation is, that transformation of groups and institutions and systems were really just as important. And that was one of my motivations for going to the UN, and my motivations for founding Cosmos is to get a picture of how embedded systems in law and science and economics and politics, the system itself is geared to separation and competition, and they no longer work. And the transfer, and what we need now is to understand how to change each one of those systems in order, along with individual transformation, to transform the whole world.
Thank you, Nancy. And I so agree with you that today we not only have the new emergence of ideas that transcend the separative world. We have ways, tools, and templates that can allow us to do that. There are a couple of points you raised that piqued my interest, and one of them is West, the word that you use, Western culture. And you're born in the West, I'm born in the East in India. And when I look at separation, separation exists in non-Western cultures as well. The separation that we've created through thousands of years, where we have a caste system in India, for example, that's very separative. Mm. It's more than separative. It's exploitative. And it's inbuilt into the cultural tenets. And there are some Indians, of course, who are transcending this and looking at our oneness. But I'd say the same for many other cultures in the East, where wealth, where royalty, where other such indicators have had people separate themselves and have looked at others as part of a very feudal society. So yes, you do talk of the individual in Western culture, but I do think that independence is an important dimension before we become interdependent. And I think that some of the cultures where there seems to be more community, there are communities within that exploit other communities. Bonded labor, for example, in the Eastern cultures that still persist in small areas. You know, so I know you mean to be self-reflective, but I just want to point out that different patterns of separation, different ways of separation, the way in which people look at women, for example, or all genders, for example, is extremely separative in most countries today. And so, non-Western cultures, too, have their own way of separating people, of not honoring people. what the LGBTQ community is facing worldwide is horrendous. It's really not okay. So I just wanted to bring that up. And
oh, yes, I'm glad you did. And that reminds me of the hierarchy, dominating hierarchies. And that's pretty well worldwide in many different areas. And that's one of the things around that we're trying to shift a worldview from dominating hierarchies. There are hierarchies. There are natural hierarchies. There are some people who are better musicians than other people. There are people who are better at science than other people and so forth. That's a natural hierarchy, which is very different from a dominating hierarchy, where the person at the top really makes the others submissive. And this is something that is all over the world, for sure. Thank you for bringing that up, Monica.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy. And, you know, this natural hierarchy that you bring forth, which is an important distinction, is now being recognized. And in the world of measurement and metrics, we are now looking at measuring capabilities so that we can distinguish that from hierarchy that's dominating and hierarchy that's based on capabilities. So, and what you call natural hierarchies. And you brought up another very interesting point, and that is our knowing that we network. And you know, for me, networking on linkages is something that human beings have done. Maybe the internet provides us with different opportunities, but let's take linkages and networks that were created to support apartheid or what happened in the Holocaust. I mean, people created networks to exploit others. So networks for me, or terrorist networks. So for me, what I hear you say is that there are new networks emerging that are based on the compassionate heart. There are new networks emerging that are looking at unworkable patterns, unworkable cultural norms, and they are connecting to be able to create a new reality. And today's internet and connectivity allows us to do this differently. Our social media allows us to do it differently. But these technologies are value neutral. The same internet that allows us to have networks that are based on values and compassion are the networks that promote, for example, child pornography. So technology is value neutral. Networks and linkages are value neutral. But what I hear you say, Nancy, which is so important, that we have unprecedented opportunities to connect based on what we care about, based on our values, in a way that we don't polarize the place as this is your group's opinion and this is my group's opinion, but we are willing to inquire into whatever we say and distinguish opinions which are based on my ideological position from worldviews that are dynamic, that I'm willing to alter based on universal values as context change. And too often in the work that I do, Nancy, it looks the same to people. People think that my opinion and then my position defines who I am and the image that I need to defend in society. And they feel altering an opinion is weakness. But to me, an opinion is nothing but a statement of how I think in the moment. And what you're talking about is a shift in worldview, a worldview that is dynamic, that's context specific, but always, always based on universal compassion, on dignity for all human beings, whether I like them or I not, I don't, and a sense of fairness that creates equity. Look at the world today and having 2 billion people go to bed hungry in a world of abundance.
Yes, you're bringing up another point that I was thinking about. The fact in the United States we're having increasing polarization politically, and it creates a stuckness. You know, both sides think they're right, and so both sides are stuck. And we've been working with Nora Bateson recently in Cosmos, who is working on how do we loosen up the stuckness of political polarization that we're experiencing today. And she's developed a form called transcontextualization, which is bringing the different institutions together who are all interdependent on the situation, like law, economics, family. And she's bringing these groups together where they represent each one of these different institutions. And by doing this, we enlarge the question so we view it, instead of getting stuck in one position or the other, we start to see the interdependence of all the different institutions, not people, but the institutions, the systems, and where they are connected to the issue. So I'm really very interested in this different ways to get out of stuckness, because that seems to be one of the problems we're experiencing today.
Absolutely, Nancy. You know, this whole attachment to our point of view and defining ourselves and our group by our opinions and our positions and our points of view is what keeps us stuck. And it's amazing that you know, you and your colleague Nora Bateson are looking at this with very practical ways. So asking a different question or getting people to see the question differently is a way in which we can create new science. In fact, it's Einstein who says that, you know, asking the right question is an advance in science itself. I mean, he says it very eloquently. And there is another piece that keeps stuckness going. And the large-scale planning models hitherto are based on logic. Nothing wrong with that, Nancy, because we have managed to address single problems, like, you know, problems that have are caused by one issue. We can address that through logic models. For example, when we worked to eradicate smallpox, we knew that if we used a good logic model, we would advance the benefits for humanity. But complex issues cannot work with single logic models. Today, in the world of planning, whether that's governments or that's large-scale NGOs or you know, communities, we continue to use logic models, and they are being promoted worldwide still, and it benefits a particular discipline. When we can transform the logic models into a transformational space by using values, we will make a real difference. And this is the difference. So firstly, a logic model talks about values, but it's not imbued in every step of the planning process. And what we have done worldwide, when we've transformed situations, and it's written up in the book, Radical Transformational Leadership, we talk about how do we plan so that transformation becomes a reality. We focus on a second thing. We focus on the shifts, which is what the new questions that most probably you and Nora Bateson are looking at. What questions should we ask such that we can transcend stuckness but shift the unworkable system, the unworkable norm? What is that question that's relevant to both parties? And then to be able to language and base our impacts our sustained equitable change on values again. So when we can look at impact differently, we will transcend this dichotomy. So for example, we were working in California using these tools and techniques. We were working with the cannabis industry, and one of my colleagues used the transformational results chain. And when the cannabis industry that was interested in not having regulation, called everyone a prohibitionist, looked at the transformational results chain, started working with what they really care about, they stated that they really care about is the well-being of communities, including their own children and youth. And through that process, they were willing to shift. And through that process, they have become partners with governments, civil societies, and NGOs to transform the cannabis industry into one that works for everyone. So I think it's absolutely possible. And I think it's a vital space for us to engage in. And thank you for bringing that up. Because for me, it's a very, very important dimension of creating a new future.
Yes.
Nancy.
Well, thank you.
We need to break again, and we will join the group in a few minutes. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Are you a game changer? Do you care about creating a vibrant future for humanity planet? If you care, you'll choose to engage in strategic actions in order to transform the realities of today for generating a thriving planet. Find out how you can do this. Read the book, Radical Transformational Leadership, by Dr. Monica Sharma. This book is a systemic exploration of how to work with and transform the interlocking circumstances contributing to the complex problems we're facing. There's a chance of achieving a world that manifests peace, equity, and well-being for everyone. And this work offers the readers the creative ways and means of contributing to such a world-changing agenda. We live in a world battling for peace, threatened with violence and inequality, being justified as both means and ends, sometimes disguised, packaged, and branded differently. This self-destructive worldview is dominated and backed by spurious arguments for leadership based on the idea of supremacy of race, religion, culture, or of money. Monica's counter, a perspective drawn from contemporary idiom, is based on experience and conviction. It shows that leadership can be shaped with equality, freedom, justice, and where means and ends are rooted in the transformatory power of human compassion. Let's explore this transformatory power of human compassion together. Join us for the program with Dream Vision 7 Radio Network every other Tuesday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and every Saturday at 6 a.m. Eastern. Share this information widely. Enroll people who want to make a difference. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network hosts many programs that unite humanity sourcing our love. Are you satisfied with the world as it is today? If you're not satisfied, join us for a program to unleash your full potential with Dr. Monica Sharma in August in Mumbai, India. It's open to all changemakers wanting to generate equitable and sustainable results for well-being. Contact +91 931 044 2441. That's +91 931 044 2441. Go to fullpotential.workshop at tiss.edu. That's fullpotential.workshop at tiss.edu. Everyone has the potential to be a leader, a person who creates a new future through actions in society, at home, and at work. In this program, you'll discover pathways for unleashing our human potential to create new futures through strategic action. Again, join us for a program to unleash your full potential with Dr. Monica Sharma in August in Mumbai, India. Contact +91 931 044 2441. That's +91 931 044 2441. Go to fullpotential.workshop at tiss.edu. That's fullpotential.workshop at tiss.edu. We need new leadership capacities to face the challenges of today's world, to think differently, design strategically, and act on principles with accountability and generate results. These new capacities must be able to align principles, purpose, and practice to build a better world. Again, join us for a program to unleash your full potential with Dr. Monica Sharma in August in Mumbai, India. Contact +91 931 044 2441. That's +91 931 044 2441. Go to fullpotential.workshop at tiss.edu. That's fullpotential.workshop at tiss.edu.
Nancy, welcome back.
Thank you, Monica.
Okay, it's been a great conversation. I'm learning so much from you as we speak, though I've learned so much from you in the past, too. And I'm sure the listeners...
Oh, it's so mutual. So mutual.
You know, there's a perspective you've shared in the past that I always, have valued. And you've talked about the testing individual and cultural habits and assumptions. And I think that the world is in such turmoil that each of us, you, I, and all the listeners, we really need to test our individual and cultural habits and assumptions. What would you like to say about that?
I think that what I'd like to say is that we all act and think from habits and assumptions. We're conditioned by our culture, our family, but mostly by our culture, and we don't even know it. We're not aware of it. And so this is one of the ways we get stuck, because we're just downloading habits that we've been taught rather than standing back and reflecting, is this what I really think, or is this what my culture or my family has taught me? And this, we form habits in terms of the way we live our lives. And habits are very difficult to change. We have to pay attention to our inner life to see where we are acting from habits and assumptions rather from being present to the new moment that we're in. At every moment of time, we're in a new situation. And being able to do this is a very important part of transformation. Otherwise, we're just really moving and acting from habits.
Right. And I think this requires us to value a different kind of adventure. And you know, it's very interesting that on one hand, we seek new things. We seek adventure in life. And to me, breaking habits is part of that adventure, particularly if breaking that habit gets us to a place where we wish to move. So to me, it's really a very interesting exploration rather than a burden. And it's about practice. And I often wonder, Nancy, you know, we want to be a tennis champion. We practice, practice, practice. We want to be a great ballet dancer, a great musician. We practice, practice, practice. If we truly want a beautiful future for everyone, where we are able to manifest our full potential, surely we should practice, practice, practice. Because that's what allows us to break our habits, right?
I didn't get that. We should practice what?
That's what I'm asking you. And so you have said to me in the past, practice ways in which we could wake up. Practice ways in which we grow up, clean our mess, link up. So what should we practice, Nancy? Because we don't practice. You know, Peter Senge says that so beautifully in his work on Dance for Change, and he says, the biggest resistance I meet is the lack of discipline to practice the tools, templates, alchemies of change.
Yes. I think that our culture has primarily led us in the direction of objective reality, and our science in particular has led us in that direction. And subjective reality we live in two worlds. We live in an objective reality, and we live in a subjective world as well. And science is just beginning to recognize that consciousness may be the ultimate reality and not materialism. And it's
right.
This consciousness, what is consciousness, but awareness. We are aware. The ultimate is that we are aware. And so this is a very important part of our life. And certainly at the margins, there are many people not only meditating in the lotus posture or taking yoga, but they are examining their inner life and the conversations that go on within your head, uninvited, are very important to watch and listen to what's going on inside, because often this is where the habits of thought, dominating and difficult things are coming from. So this self-awareness, this knowledge and wisdom of looking inside at all one's thoughts and reflections, whether in the lotus posture or not, does not matter. This can be an everyday practice for everyone. And you'll be amazed if you start to look at what's going on inside of you, what you will find.
Absolutely, Nancy. We've come to the end of our conversation for today. And I just think that your points on the compassionate heart, the power of beauty, and what it does to our soul, our abilities to unstuck ourselves and transcend polarized conversations, the need for our own awareness to become more present so that we can transcend the dichotomies that we see today, to move from our polarization to our oneness, to have partnerships that make such a difference, where we generate results based on compassion and our humanity. This has been fascinating. Thank you, Nancy.
Oh, thank you, Monica. It's always wonderful to talk with you.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.